Just below Lake Tinkiller Dam, donning waders and a fly rod, Scott Hood stands in the cold waters of the Lower Illinois River near Gore.
I've actually stood in the same spot with the same fly and caught 8 species of fish.
And it's not long before he gets a bite.
Wait, there's one. There's one. Not a very big one, but, you know.
Hood is with the Tulsa chapter of Trout Unlimited. Back on shore, he explains why the conservation group has come out against State Question 777.
Changing the state constitution is a step too far. Farmers already have a terrific right to farm.
State Question 777 creates strange bedfellows, like Trout Unlimited and the animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
I have to chuckle a little bit every time I think about who Trout Unlimited has joined forces with in this Vote No campaign, is that we're on the same team as PETA, and I'm sure they don't particularly care for us trout fishermen or anglers for that matter. You know, they're vegans and, you know, don't eat trout, and it hurts them when you catch them and all that kind of stuff.
What would make a conservative Oklahoma trout fisherman team up with animal rights groups firmly opposed to hunting and fishing? Right to farm and State Question 777 cut across and blur a lot of traditional political lines. Is divisive and unifying in odd, interesting ways. And the fight is on. I'm Logan Layden.
And I'm Joe Wirtz. Together, we're State Impact Oklahoma.
For the next hour or so, we're going to take you through State Question 777, so you're well informed when you walk into the voting booth on November 8th. You can think of this as a field guide to State Question 777.
Let's start with the question itself and how it would change Oklahoma's constitution. The ballot question, informally known as the Right to Farm Amendment, would add language blocking future laws that restrict agricultural technology, livestock production, and ranching practices unless there's a compelling state interest to do so.
If 777 passes, Oklahoma would be one of only 3 states to extend constitutional protections to farming and ranching.
Oklahoma is a farm state. It always has been.
Time was, all this belonged to the buffalo.
Thousands came here for the land run in 1889 to stake claims in the so-called unassigned land. That land quickly became farmland, and agriculture dominated Oklahoma's economy through much of the 20th century.
Every field in western Kansas began to move at once. Torrents of wind raced down from the north. Visibility shrank from miles to yards. Toward noon in Kansas, the wind seemed suddenly to roll, picking up great chunks of earth.
Oklahoma agriculture was front and center through the 1930s. A lingering drought and a nationwide Great Depression put a microscope on land use and soil conservation practices.
The cloud of dust stretched from east to west as far as the eye could see.
But farming and ranching rebounded.
There's a brand new story to tell. It's a story of beef on the move, from the prairie grasses to the feedlots to the markets and finally to the dinner tables of the world.
In the 1960s, the Beef Institute bragged, giving Oklahoma a new spot on the national map as Cow Country, USA.
It's a story of cows and calves and a story of grass. And the man who puts them all together, hoping to make a profit.
Farming and ranching isn't the dominant economic driver anymore, but agriculture is still vital in Oklahoma. Agriculture is a $40 billion a year industry that directly employs more than 70,000 people, most of which are individuals or families. The state helps feed and clothe the country. Oklahoma is number one in the nation for rye production and is a top producer of canola, winter wheat, and sorghum, among other crops. The state also ranks second in the nation for its inventory of beef cows, which translates into more than $4 billion in cattle and calf sales per year.
State Question 777 would make farming and ranching a constitutional right in Oklahoma. Only two other states have amended their constitutions with similar language, Missouri and North Dakota, and that happened in the last few years. Among supporters, they're known as right to farm amendments. It's a modern movement, but that term, right to farm, isn't new.
Well, right to farm is a sort of misnomer.
Melissa Mortisavi is a law professor at the University of Oklahoma.
Right to farm is a term that's been used traditionally to talk about state-level statutes that protect farmers from urban encroachment.
In the 1950s and 60s, states across the country started enacting measures to keep those who moved near farms from filing lawsuits, claiming the noise, dust, and bad smells that often come with growing crops and raising animals were a nuisance.
If urban encroachment came close to a farm, they couldn't then sue and say a nuisance, you know, your hog farm stinks because your hog farm was there first.
It's stinking for years.
Right, exactly. So the idea with these traditional right to farm statutes, which exist in every state in the United States in some format, was to say, look, to the extent there's a pre-existing farming use for land, we want to protect the ability of those parties, those people, to continue to do on their land what they've always done on their land.
Enter the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. The National Conservative Group is comprised of lawmakers and business representatives who draft and share model legislation. ALEC has been a key player in the expansion of right-to-farm protections across the U.S. In the late 90s and 2000s, ALEC model legislation was used by many states to strengthen right-to-farm laws that were already on the books. Oklahoma added language that broadened lawsuit protections for farm and ranch operations. Supporters say constitutional amendments like Oklahoma's State Question 777 are a necessary next step in expanding those protections to insulate farmers from overreaching legislation and outside groups pushing for more regulation. Oklahoma is just the latest battlefield over this issue, which at its core is between national and state farm bureaus and the Humane Society of the U.S., or HSUS. The farm bureaus claim they're responding to overregulation of the ag industry and the influence of national animal rights groups. HSUS has successfully pushed for things like bans on the caging of egg-laying hens or stricter regulation on GMO crops and seeds in other states. John Collison with the Oklahoma Farm Bureau doesn't want that same thing to occur in Oklahoma.
We see what's happening from California and some HSUS organizations where they're going to stop at no costs. They'll raise millions of dollars every year through false advertising, frankly, to try to come out against the agricultural industry.
Collison says 777 is necessary to stop groups like HSUS from interfering with the way farmers and ranchers treat their livestock and to protect against rural Oklahoma's waning influence in state government.
It's just another layer of protection for the agriculture industry. Is it the be-all, the end-all? I don't know. But it is, you know, we have representatives out here that want to run these bills to make sure that our farming and ranching is protected into the future. As this legislative body becomes more urban, that becomes more important to make sure we remember what it does take to grow and raise animals in Oklahoma and in America, frankly.
In interviews over the course of the last 2 years, it became clear. The larger the farm, the more likely the owner is pro-777 and anti-HSUS. When we talk to small organic and sustainable farmers, though, a different point of view on HSUS emerged.
See, this is the difference between big ag and rural farmers. Farming in the 50s was farmers who went and they sold their stuff to the co-op, their grains, their animals. They took them to sell barns. And there's still people who do that.
That's Dustin Green. He owns a 10-acre farm near Norman with about 400 chickens.
But now everything is mass-produced, and when you start mass-producing, you lose accountability. It's important, and I have no affiliation with Humane Society at all, but it's important to have organizations like them who hold us accountable, that say, you know, this isn't good for the animal. It's unsanitary, it spreads bacteria, it spreads diseases. They shouldn't be locked in cages. They shouldn't be locked in barns.
Chip, chip, chip. Chip, chip, chip.
Sheep, ducks, llamas, hogs, and cattle mingle on Colleen Thornton's 60-acre farm down a maze of gravel roads near Tahlequah. Colleen sees both sides of right to farm.
Personally, I'm not sure we need an amendment to our Constitution, but I do understand the question of do we want someone from out of state telling us how we do business?
Colleen cares deeply about the welfare of animals, especially hers, but she doesn't judge bigger farms.
There's incorporated family farms that can have thousands of acres, but they're just trying to make a living for their generation and the next generation.
Cynthia Armstrong is the Humane Society of the U.S.'s Oklahoma director.
We're a 61-year-old, well-respected, mainstream animal protection organization, you know, and it's just boggles my mind.
She says farmers and ranchers worried about HSUS's influence should be much more fearful about the encroachment of giant, multinational, confined animal feeding operations, she says are the real benefactors of right-to-farm amendments.
If 777 passes, it's just like rolling out the red carpet for these concentrated animal feeding operations, and there will be no way to regulate them. They will have sweeping constitutional protection, and when somebody decides that there's a public health risk or an animal welfare issue, we'll be tied up in court for years while one tries to demonstrate a compelling state interest.
Barbara Jake steers her SUV down a gravel road and turns toward a field of tall grass prairie in northeastern Oklahoma's Osage County.
This is our heifer pasture.
Okay.
We like to put our first calf heifers in here because there's lots of places for them to get in, out of the weather, out of the wind when they're calving. This
is cozy. Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
Jake's hops out. She's convinced her husband Dave and daughter Sarah to take a quick break from work.
This is my daughter Sarah.
Sarah, Joe Wirtz, how are you?
Good.
Nice to see you.
Sarah's feeding cattle.
Oh, no.
I'm nursing a bad back, so I'm loafing.
Grass is great here. It's been a good year for good grass, so it's a good place where you can find all of them easy and see if they need some help. And there's not a whole bunch of, you know, trees or, you know, it's just easy to see them and locate them and get a good count on them. And when we come check them in the evenings and make sure they're all doing good, not having any problems.
My grandfather came here in about 1906 and we've stayed a small family operation since then. And run a few stalkers in the summer and usually weaner calves and send them to wheat in the winter. Mm-hmm. Sell them as feeders in the spring around the 1st of March. And that's kind of what we do.
The Jakes family feels strongly that Oklahoma's agriculture industry needs constitutional protection. Barbara says environmental groups and animal rights organizations have always targeted farming and ranching operations.
My first experience at seeing this type of organization was over 40 years ago. And over the years, we've watched them grow and become more powerful and have more money. And over the years, you just wonder, when are they really going to start making a difference in how we farm and ranch and the food that we eat? And the day is here.
Sarah Jakes says that one day, such groups might get a small foothold.
And slowly just start chipping away at the industry and making it where we can't do this, either financially or because they've gotten so much legislation passed that our hands are tied.
She says State Question 777 would guard against laws mandating pen sizes or requiring a veterinarian to administer shots and medication.
Just how many head we're allowed to have, or what we feed them, how we feed them, just everything. And I think people need to remember, we're trying to really take care of our animals.
Barbara Jakes says she takes personal offense to suggestions that proponents of 777 are doing the bidding of Big Ag, or international food production companies.
When they drive down the highway and they look at the landscape, they need to remember that a family, farm, or rancher, or a private citizen, an individual, owns that. Not a corporation, not a big company, not a foreign investor. Your neighbors, your friends, people you might know or not know. But it's all owned by an individual or a family. They take really good care of that land to keep it producing year after year. And that's why it looks so beautiful. And if you look out and you see the cattle, you're not seeing cattle that are starving or being abused. They're fat, shiny animals out there grazing, and they're a very healthy animal. And that's what we like to produce. And because of education and science and a lot of research, we feel pretty confident that we know how to produce an animal that's going to produce a safe quality product for people to eat.
Oklahoma farmers like the Jakes, who support State Question 777, point to states like California, Oregon, and Vermont. Those states have enacted laws that regulate things like the size of chicken cages and GMO seeds and plants.
California, under the model law presented by the HSUS, they got it on a ballot themselves to ban certain kinds of cages for egg-laying chickens or hens.
That's OU agricultural law professor Drew Kirshen, who grew up on a farm. He says many farmers fear the influence and deep pockets of the Humane Society of the U.S. and other national groups like PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which have successfully pushed for animal welfare laws in many states.
Some groups are attempting to ban on-farm castration of livestock, your calves or your pigs, and to require that it have to all be done under anesthesia and by a veterinarian. Well, I'm a kid who grew up on a farm. I learned to castrate by the time I was probably 8 or 10 and was out there doing it all the time on pigs and calves. That's just what we did on the farm.
The Humane Society of the U.S. promotes what it calls the three R's, reduce, refine, and replace. That's reduce the consumption of meat, refine meat-eating habits to only animals raised sustainably, and replace meat with plants in the daily diet.
What exactly are Meatless Mondays, in a nutshell? Well, it's pretty self-explanatory.
These ideas are part of the reason they've spearheaded efforts like Meatless Monday.
Number one, the environment. You know, the air, water, soil. Well, it's in trouble. Global warming, greenhouse gases, all that stuff. What's one of the largest contributors at play? According to the United Nations, animal agriculture.
A powerful national organization with the goal of ending meat consumption worries Oklahoma farmers like the Jakes family and Travis Snythman, whose family works a 5,000-acre ranch near Garber in north-central Oklahoma.
My great-great-grandpa went homestead here in 1893 in the Cherokee Strip land run, so that makes me the fifth generation.
He's adamantly in favor of right to farm and points to a Humane Society-backed law in California.
And so basically they put rules and regulations on how animals are housed. They've got to be in rich crates and rich pens. And what it's done is decrease that production. Those farmers out there can't compete on the national scale with other states that don't have those rules and regulations.
The Jakes and Snythmans hope the passage of State Question 777 will secure their farming future. But in the two states that already have a constitutional right to farm, North Dakota and Missouri, right to farm's influence is less than clear. North Dakota was the right to farm guinea pig. It was the first state to elevate farming and ranching to a constitutional right. And the vote there wasn't even close, a 2-to-1 margin. That was 4 years ago. Since then,
it hasn't been tried in the court system up here yet.
That's Jeffrey Missling, Vice President and CEO of the North Dakota Farm Bureau. He says his state's legislature hasn't passed any laws that would run up against right to farm. He adds HSUS hasn't successfully pushed for more rules about the treatment of livestock. Missling hopes the amendment never has to be used.
We saw what groups, anti-agriculture groups like HSUS were doing in other states. We saw them come into Arizona and California and Colorado and beyond and wreak havoc on their ag industries. And we didn't want to take that chance anymore. We wanted something cemented into our state constitution.
Missling says legislators from across the country have contacted him to learn more about right to farm and how to get it passed. Nebraska and Indiana have flirted with right to farm, but so far Missouri is the only other state that has it. Like in North Dakota, the Missouri legislature hasn't passed any bills that run afoul of right to farm. But Christopher Husted, a reporter for Harvest Public Media in Missouri, says individuals in the Show Me State are using it in creative ways.
But the majority of the times it's been invoked in court is for marijuana farm operations. So people who have been caught growing, I don't know, anywhere between a couple plants to a couple hundred plants have tried to use this argument to defend why they are growing marijuana.
That's a novel approach by defense attorneys to get their clients out of trouble for growing weed, but
that has been shot down every time in court.
In another case, a man was raising chickens within city limits. He argued his right to farm trumps local zoning ordinances. Husted says it didn't work for him either.
Who's actually defined as a farmer in this situation? Is it someone who has three chickens, or is it someone who makes X amount of dollars? You know, that's kind of where the courts have tried to interpret it. And at least in that situation, that person was not deemed a farmer, and city ordinance dictated what the ruling was for that situation.
Opponents of right to farm argue its passage will lead to an influx of foreign-owned corporate farms that don't care about local people or the environment. They also say concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, will proliferate. And in Missouri, there are more foreign-owned farms and CAFOs than ever before. But it's impossible to directly link those larger trends to right to farm, because they were already happening. Missouri farmer and former legislator Wes Schumacher was one of the leaders in the fight against Missouri's amendment. He acknowledges a direct link is hard to prove, but he says he predicted one thing correctly. Right to farm's application will be decided by the courts.
You're going to throw these decisions in front of a judge, and many times these judges have no idea, and there's hardly any voice on the side of family farm agriculture in that courtroom.
Right to farm was on the August 2014 primary ballot, and fewer than 1 million Missourians cast their ballots. Its margin of victory was less than 2,400 votes. Husted, the reporter, and Schumacher both say that toward the end of the campaign, the no side was gaining steam in Missouri. And they think if the vote had happened a few weeks later, Right to Farm likely would not have passed. Listening to A Field Guide to State Question 777, State Impact's documentary on a ballot measure that would make farming and ranching a constitutional right in Oklahoma.
It seems unlikely that Oklahoma lawmakers would adopt the agenda of animal rights organizations, but it was outside groups like the Humane Society of the U.S. and the Fund for Animals that successfully pushed to get cockfighting banned in Oklahoma. David Von Tunglin, a farmer, rancher, and veterinarian who lives near Calumet in central Oklahoma, isn't big on cockfighting, but he thinks that out-of-state influence could happen again with more mainstream farming practices in the future. Von Tunglin is a vocal supporter of State Question 777 and has donated to groups urging a yes vote on November 8th. He says urban areas are expanding in population and political influence, and young Oklahomans aren't growing up in farm families.
I know there are people in Oklahoma City that have never been off concrete. Never had dirt under their fingernails, so.
Von Tunglin says farmers and ranchers are already starting to see signs of the disconnect with the state capitol. In 2014, for example, a lawmaker from southwestern Oklahoma,
Jackson County, where they grow lots and lots of cotton,
introduced a bill requiring the labeling of genetically engineered food or seeds, including cotton seeds.
Which is, you know, 90% of the cotton grown today is GMO of some sort.
It's actually even higher than that. Data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture show that more than 98% of the cotton planted in Oklahoma this year was genetically modified. Von Tunglin says it's a bad sign that a local lawmaker would propose a bill requiring the labeling of nearly all the varieties of a major cash crop already growing in his district.
Because one constituent came to him and asked him, thought it was a good idea, so when it was explained to him, he realized the error and withdrew the legislation, but it can happen that easily.
777 backers are worried regulations could hamper agricultural innovations. They're particularly concerned about animal rights groups whose ultimate goal is to end meat eating and the pressure they apply on legislators. Farmers today have to feed a growing, hungry world, and many say that can't be done with free-range chickens and organic farming alone. John Collison with the Oklahoma Farm Bureau says it's not realistic.
Now we need to raise pigs in the open, and we need to let cows run free every single, give them 5 acres per whatever. So it's really to protect us. We're using the best science practices today to raise the most amount of food to feed the world. You know, we got over 300 million Americans we got to feed at 3 meals a day. It takes a lot of people and a lot of agriculture to do this, and you can't just, run it on feel-good science.
What are you doing?
Cows, ducks, and turkeys moo, quack, and gobble at the rowdy Stickhorse Farm. Baby goats are trotting one by one down a well-worn path. Hogs are slopping around, enjoying a recent rainfall. Chickens are pecking and squawking. And guinea hens are darting between all the action in little packs.
The guineas will stay in groups of about 40 to 50, and they run wild. When you come out here, they're just wherever they want to be.
Paulette Rink runs the farm, which is located near Covington in northwest Oklahoma.
Well, we are very diversified. We try to stay with a little bit more of the heritage breeds. We have Gloucestershire Old Spot hogs. We have Dexter cattle, Kiko and Sonnen, and Nigerian dwarf goats. We have about 20 varieties of chickens from Welsomers to Barred Rocks. We like a variety of color in our eggs, and our customers seem to like that too. So we have pink eggs, green eggs.
Rink says the variety ensures the farm offers a lot of different products to customers, but the mix of animals is strategic in another way. Rink says everything works together in an organic permaculture system where healthy, happy animals are raised with minimal fences, cages, and pens.
We do a rotational grazing program where we basically move things from lot to lot to lot.
Rink helped co-found the Oklahoma Food Cooperative, a member-owned group of farmers, ranchers, artisans, and customers that's urging voters to mark no on State Question 777. She thinks the measure is designed to protect some Oklahoma farms at the expense of others.
I'm talking nationally owned companies, not Oklahoma farmers. Yes, we have a lot of corporate farmers in Oklahoma that are family-owned businesses. More power to them. I am talking about ones that are mainstreamed, thousands and thousands upon thousands of animals in their operations, and none of it really stays here. It goes out of state, goes overseas.
State Question 777 has become a heated subject among Oklahoma farmers. Even Rink's own family has had disagreements on the issue. It's a divisive local political issue in an election year that, even by American political standards, most scholars and insiders would rank as extraordinarily polarizing. Rink says, in this political climate, just putting out a 777 yard sign is asking for trouble.
A lady 2 weeks ago got a vote no yard sign, and she said, "Paulette, you're not going to believe what happened." And I said, "What? What's going on?" She goes, "My yard sign, somebody pulled in, tore it up, and threw it in my yard. I said, are you kidding me? I said, you sure it just wasn't some kids? She goes, no, because she has a Clinton sign and two or three other things out there, and they only tore up her vote no sign. So,
supporters of the amendment say their signs have been vandalized too. State Impact has seen photos showing yes on 777 signs ripped in half and billboards punctured by rocks and other objects.
Individuals, businesses, and organizations are spending big to influence how Oklahomans vote on State Question 777. The amount of campaign dollars involved suggests right to farm is high-stakes Oklahoma politics. In the months leading up to the election, 777 attracted more direct donations than any other ballot question. The Yes on 777 campaign got an early start. The primary group backing the state question, Oklahoma Farmers Care, was organized in 2015 and leads total fundraising by more than one-third. To date, the group has pulled in more than $1.3 million in donations. Many of those donations have come from individual farmers. Those smaller amounts have been amplified by $5,000 and $10,000 checks from local farm bureaus, banks, and ag industry groups like the Cattlemen's Association and the Pork Council, which in full disclosure has financially supported State Impact. Groups urging a no vote on State Question 777 started from behind but have almost caught up in fundraising. The two primary groups opposing 777, the Stewardship Council and Oklahoma Food, Farm, and Family, out-fundraised the Yes campaign during the last two quarters and has nearly closed the 2016 fundraising gap. Groups opposing 777 have raised about $950,000 so far. The No Coalition has received big checks from social welfare group Oklahoma Rising and the Humane Society of the U.S., and received financial support from individual donors, including a board member of the Kirkpatrick Foundation, which, in full disclosure again, has also financially supported State Impact.
That's the money coming in. Let's talk about the money going out, which pays for things like yard signs, TV and radio ads, t-shirts, bumper stickers, and research. Overall, the No on 777 groups have outspent the Yes team, but just slightly. Recently, the Yes campaign has boosted spending by more than 700%, while the No campaign has ramped it up by 300%. State campaign finance records show spending on political committees organized to campaign for specific issues, but they don't reveal how much money individual organizations or businesses are spending on their own to tell Oklahomans how to vote on 777. And the records we do have, they only show fundraising through September. Information on the final push, when a lot of campaigns raise and spend big bucks, we won't know those numbers until after the election.
Opponents of 777 say the state of Oklahoma already protects the rights of farmers and ranchers to farm and ranch. They say 777 would be a highly unusual granting of extra rights to a certain segment of the economy that could give the ag industry the ability to pollute and treat animals as inhumanely as it wants. At a meeting of the Oklahoma Scenic Rivers Commission this summer, members of the water advocacy group Save the Illinois River were there, and Farm Bureau President Tom Buchanan made a presentation in support of State Question 777.
I would tell you that agriculture believes it's now is the time that we need this additional help. It is the right time to do this for the right reasons.
For more than a decade, water advocates have been trying to get chicken farmers in northeast Oklahoma to move chicken waste out of the Illinois River watershed instead of using it to fertilize their crops and allowing it to run off into the river. The state sued chicken producers over the issue in a case that has yet to be resolved. At the same meeting, Save the Illinois River founder Ed Brocksmith excoriated Buchanan.
The people of Oklahoma did not ask for this proposed constitutional change. Protect the farmers. By God, if we're going to do that, let's protect used car salesmen. Now, we've got to put this down. This is not State Question 777. It's State Question 666. The devil is in the details, and the Farm Bureau is the enemy of clean water.
Many of the state's largest Indian nations also oppose State Question 777. They, too, are concerned about water.
You know, Cherokees are, we love agriculture. Anytime, you know, Cherokees are somewhere, you're going to see corn, beans, and squash growing.
Sarah Hill is Secretary of Natural Resources for the Cherokee Nation. She says the question is dangerous for Oklahoma.
Because it ties the hands of the legislature in circumstances where we might really need them to step in and take action. And you don't have to look very far in Oklahoma to see that there are a lot of issues here that agriculture impacts. And of course, everyone knows here, the Illinois River has really, there's been a constant dispute about the extent to which agricultural runoff affects water quality in the Illinois.
Opponents say 777 will hurt the small family farmer and benefit giant multinational corporate farms. They say if those large agribusinesses get these extra rights, they'll push small farmers out, replaced with massive, faceless hog or cattle operations. That's one of the reasons former Oklahoma Attorney General Drew Edmondson is against right to farm.
It didn't come from farmers and ranchers writing letters saying we need a constitutional amendment. You know, I would defy them to show me that letter from a farmer or rancher saying we need a constitutional amendment. This is coming from Smithfield Farms, from Seaboard, from Pig Improvement Corporation, from Tyson, from Peterson, from Simmons, you know, the big producers that want protection so they can operate unregulated.
State Impact reached out to many of those companies for comments. Seaboard, Smithfield, Tyson, as well as JBS, a big international beef processing company, didn't respond to interview requests. I meet Edmondson at Provision Kitchen in Oklahoma City. Owner Whitney McClendon gets locally sourced organic food right out of the restaurant's nearby garden.
Just down Wilshire, it's about 7 miles from the restaurant. Obviously, everything here is seasonal, and as much as we can, we source from our farm. When we don't, we have these other local farms listed up here for exactly what we get where and the quality of the ingredient. Non-GMO pasture-raised chicken. We get all of our eggs from our organic farm.
McClendon doesn't hesitate when asked her thoughts on State Question 777.
I am 100% vote no on State Question 777. You know, everyone says that being a USDA certified organic farm is one of the most difficult things. And I welcome that regulation. You know, there's that fine line, but I want someone regulating to a certain extent what goes in my food, what's humane, what chemistry I can do to my food. I'd rather have transparency and predictability, and it's all within reason. To me, the much scarier part is if you have no regulation.
Opponents like Edmondson say the legislature would be powerless to stop factory farms from displacing smaller farms.
The biggest threat to the family farm today are those huge operations. They're going to put the family farmer out of business, not legislation, you know, not administrative rules. It's going to be the market economics of agriculture that's going to put the family farmer out of business. And 777 will remove the ability of the legislature to protect them, to make sure they have access to markets. We won't be able to meddle in that arena if 777 passes. and you can say goodbye to the family farm.
Edmondson even says passing 777 could lead to the return of cockfighting and other undesirable practices he says could pass as farming or ranching.
There are 25 million dogs consumed annually by humans for food. And if somebody decides that there is a market in the state of Oklahoma to produce dogs as food, you know, five states have laws against it. We're not one of them. And we won't be. You know, if somebody decides to do that, and if they think they can sell it, they will do it. We will be powerless to stop it.
Nothing in the scores of interviews State Impact conducted for this documentary suggests dog farming is on the horizon for Oklahoma, whether 777 passes or fails. But several sources told State Impact they were worried about the return of puppy mills and cockfighting. But State Question 777 grandfathers in legislation written before 2014. Oklahoma voters banned cockfighting with a state question in 2002, and anti-puppy mill law has been on the books since 2011. Neither cockfighting nor puppy mills can return without voter or legislative action.
In the weeks leading up to the November election, officials in cities and towns across the state have urged Oklahomans to vote no on State Question 777. From Choctaw to Edmond, Midwest City, Norman.
Thanks, Mark. All right, ready to vote?
The Oklahoma City Council approved such a resolution in September.
All right, cast your votes. And it passes 6-2.
A few weeks later, it was Tulsa's turn to weigh in.
Yes.
Councilor America?
Yes.
Councilor Lakin?
Yes.
Councilor Bynum?
Yes.
Councilor Henderson?
Yes.
Councilor Q?
Yes.
Councilor Patrick?
Yes.
Items 8B and 8C are approved. 9.
Tulsa's resolution didn't explicitly urge Oklahomans to vote no on 777, but leaders voted 7-1 to ask locals to carefully consider the potential adverse effects a yes vote might have on the city of Tulsa.
I think that this proposal has had, and the more that all of us have learned, we've seen there are some unintended consequences that are particularly concerning for municipality.
That's Tulsa City Councilor Anna America.
We've got agricultural zone land all across the city, spotted through neighborhoods, through retail areas, that might make us vulnerable to that being used in ways that we as city leaders and citizens didn't intend. And again, I think these are completely unintended consequences. I know the legislature, that was not their goal. They weren't sitting here trying to, you know, infiltrate that. They were focused on protecting the farmers.
There are a few legal questions that we just don't have a really good frame of reference for, and so we kind of just have to see how it plays out.
Shannon Farrell is a professor of agricultural law at Oklahoma State University. He says local governments worry that if 777 passes, it will challenge a system that grants cities the authority to regulate local land use and enact ordinances to oversee things like water, noise, and dust.
We really don't have enough case law from other states to see how this sort of constitutional amendment's been interpreted by other states.
And concerns about local zoning ordinances are just one example of legal questions raised by 777. The measure would amend the Oklahoma Constitution to prevent the state legislature from enacting laws that limit ag technology, livestock production, or ranching practices unless there's a compelling state interest. In other areas of law, this strict standard guards against racial discrimination and protects things like religious liberty, voting, and access to the courts.
It's kind of uncommon that you have a right like this defined in a constitution.
Opponents urging a no vote say the amendment will mean the state loses regulatory control over environmental issues like water pollution. Farrell thinks that worry is overblown. He says public health and safety are a compelling state interest, and so is water. But who defines what is in the state's compelling interest? Most likely, judges will decide after a law regulating agriculture gets challenged on the basis that it runs up against the Right to Farm Amendment. If voters approve 777, Farrell is confident courts will preserve the state's ability to pass laws protecting environmental concerns that broadly impact the public.
The legislature can still enact regulations and statutory restrictions, but it now has an additional burden of proof.
But University of Oklahoma law professor Melissa Mortisavi sees bigger problems lurking in the specific language of 777.
This is about incentivizing and protecting a certain type of farming.
Mortisavi says large farm operations and corporate food production companies stand to gain the most from an amendment that guards agriculture technology.
That's not going to be garden variety farmers, right? They don't own the genetic rights to the seed that they plant.
If Mortisavi is right about 777, it could take a while before the effects are felt in Oklahoma. As we heard earlier, there haven't been any major problems or court battles in the two states that already passed a Right to Farm Amendment, or at least not yet.
State Question 777 won't be the sexiest choice on the Oklahoma ballot. There's a president to vote for, and state questions on the criminal justice system, alcohol laws, and education that will dominate the post-election analysis. But save some serious thought for 777. Both sides of this issue agree on one thing. The impact of its passage or failure could be felt in Oklahoma for decades into the future. So it's up to you, Oklahoma voters. Shall the proposal be approved? Yes or no?
Field Guide to State Question 777 was researched, reported, and produced by State Impact journalist Logan Layden
and Joe Wirtz.
Hey, that's me. The documentary was edited by Jacob McClellan from KGOU. Jenny Heinrichs and Ryan LaCroix from KOSU helped with social media, community outreach, and the music. The original score was written and performed by Grace and Sophia Babb of Annie Oakley. Funding for the music was provided by the Kirkpatrick Foundation.